Hello, everyone. This is Julia Barbara, host of the Julia and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Julia, this is going to be a special podcast for you,
isn't it? I'm excited for this one. I really am.
You've been waiting a long time for this podcast. Today, we want to welcome Dr. David Hanscom. My wife called him Dr. David Handsome, an orthopedic complex spinal deformity surgeon. That's a mouthful right there, who retired from his practice in 2019 to focus on teaching people how to break loose from the grip of chronic mental and physical pain without any surgery, with and without surgery. In his book, Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain, he not only provides insights, but reflects on escaping from his own 15 years of suffering. Welcome to the show, Dr. David.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
This is a big topic for us. I mean, we're more in the natural world. You know, we're trying to fix issues and stress and pain more on the natural side. And so a friend of mine from the Jake and Gino community on our women's group, I'll give a shout out to Carrie, because she's the one that read your book and insisted that I bought it. She didn't say, you know, try it out or look into it. She's like, you have to get this. And I got it. I read the first 40 pages and my husband stole it. I'm just going to put that out there. But it's so fascinating because there's more to pain than people realize. And I'm really excited for you to be here and talk about that, because we're going to even get to an anxiety issue.
Yeah, Dr. David, before you share your journey of pain, Carrie had a surgery, spinal surgery. It didn't really work. And then she got the book soon after that and read it. And it probably just got her so infuriated, but at least she's got the information. Why don't you share your journey of chronic pain and how you were such a high performer working in the surgery space and just crushing it, and then one day the house crumbles all around you?
Well, it's an unusual story in that I went to one of the top spine training programs in the world at the time. So it wasn't necessarily hard work physically compared to my residency, but it was incredibly high expectations. They were perfectionistic, they were critical, and nothing you ever did was good enough. So they viewed us as products. We had to perform at a certain level. So I had, you know, done the usual medical school, college, was a high performer. And the reason why I was such a high performer, what I didn't realize, I was sort of outrunning my past. And so I came from an abusive childhood. I had to prove myself. And I do think this is a very motivating factor for many high-level professionals, hence the imposter syndrome. And so you're never good enough, never good enough. And so it pushes you harder than you should to become a physician. And being a spine surgeon is sort of perverse. Normal, I keep telling my wife, normal people don't go into spine surgery. But I was on hyperdrive, but I didn't realize I was outrunning my past. So my coping skill was being fearless. I mean, I was known as the brick. That was my nickname. I took pride in that. In retrospect, that's not a great trait. But that was what I did. And my attitude was, bring it on. You cannot give me enough stress. So in 2000, let's see, what was it now? Blanking out. So 1990, I was driving across the 520 bridge in Seattle about 10 o'clock at night after hosting a major spine meeting. And I was coming into the on-ramp and I had a panic attack. I'm going, what is this? So I was so good at suppressing anxiety, I didn't even know what it was. In fact, I had a patient come into my orthopedic ward when I was a resident with an anxiety disorder, and I had to look it up. I didn't know what the word meant. So I went from no anxiety, bring it on, unbelievable amount of stress. And the more stress there was, the more pride I took in bring it on. So all of a sudden I drove down the bridge and I couldn't breathe. My heart started to race. I began to sweat. I felt like I was going to die. Totally blown out of the water. I did not know what was happening. So I had to look that up. So it was a panic attack. So that started a 13-year nosedive into the deepest chronic pain you can imagine. I had migraine headaches, ringing in my ears, feet burning, my scalp was itching, skin rashes over my entire body coming and going. I had severe anxiety, depression, developed a full-blown obsessive compulsive disorder manifested by multiple intrusive thoughts. And I had 17 different symptoms, 17. And by 1997, I descended into full-blown obsessive compulsive disorder. By 2002, I was actively getting ready to commit suicide. I have 20 medical colleagues dead from suicide. And I've thought this for a long time, that the worst part of this whole ordeal, in spite of all the physical pain and symptoms, was the unrelenting thoughts. The inability to escape my unpleasant thoughts blew me away. So, of course, more panic attacks, more anxiety. And so the two things were the worst part of the thing. I became very socially isolated, which was crushing. Then this inability to escape my thoughts is what really almost drove me to suicide. Mm. And I have 20 medical colleagues that I know personally that have committed suicide. And now I'm writing a book on what's called RUTs, repetitive unpleasant thoughts. So I didn't realize for a long time, I thought anxiety was a psychological issue, could not have been more wrong. And that's where medicine's actually missed it. It took me about 15 years to figure out by my own experience, patient's experience, and then going into the literature, that anxiety is just a sensation generated when you're in fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So something threatens you, how do you feel? Anxious. My cat has the same reaction, but she doesn't have language. Mm. The problem with treating anxiety psychologically is that the survival reaction is 1 million times stronger than your conscious brain. Your unconscious brain processes about 40 million bits of information per second. The conscious brain processes 40. So mind over matter doesn't work. You can't control it. As a friend of mine, Bruce Lipton, points out that anxiety and anger are hardwired, automatic survival reactions that we have no control over. Bam. Then these, when your brain's fired up in fight or flight, then these thoughts come flying out like crazy. So then the thoughts themselves fire up fight or flight. So what's evolved is what I call dynamic healing, where there's three parts of staying alive for every living creature. You have your circumstances or your challenges or stresses. You have your nervous system that processes all the sensory input, including your thoughts. Then you have your physiology or body's chemical state, which can be in fight or flight or safety that we call rest and digest. So they're necessary survival reactions. You have to have fight or flight to survive. It's a gift. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to make you feel horrible because that's a survival sensation. It's not supposed to feel good. It never will. But you can't take it personally. Everybody has it. Mm-hmm. But we do. We feel terrible, ashamed, guilty, all these terrible sensations, and we give stories to these sensations, but it's just a chemical reaction.
Mm-hmm. Dr. David, how did you cure yourself though? Mm-hmm. I mean, like going back to the story, you're going through 13 years, you feel isolated. What was the aha moment? Did you go through therapy? Did you get any type of coaching? Did you take any type of medication? Was there any professionals out there that helped you? I don't want to say go get over the hump, but understand the realization and take those next steps to start healing yourself.
I went through 13 years of psychotherapy, made things way worse. And what I realized, you focus on the problem, and that's where your brain develops. Mm. So that didn't work. I tried every medication possible. That didn't come close to working. There wasn't anything I didn't try. So the aha moment was I happened to pick up a book by David Burns called Feeling Good. And he talked about expressive writing, so I started to write things down. And for the first time in 13 years, I felt a shift. In 2 weeks, there was a definite shift. By 6 weeks, I'm going, okay, there's some hope here. Turns out that hope itself is anti-inflammatory. Anyway, going forward 6 months, I then recognized the fact that I had anger issues, which I didn't think I had. I was pretty proud of my anger management. And everybody has it. It's a stronger survival reaction. Anxiety and anger are both threat physiology, not psychological. And anger is very powerful. So I came to grips with the fact that, yeah, I did have anger. Maybe I was angry. And within about 6 months, every one of my symptoms disappeared. I have no OCD. I don't have anxiety. I don't have depression. I don't have skin rashes. My migraines are gone. My feet don't burn. My ears don't ring. It's gone.
Wow.
So there's a term in medicine called medically unexplained symptoms, MUS. And it cannot be more wrong. They say, well, we can't find anything wrong, you know, have a good life. Everything's wrong. Your entire body chemistry is on fire. So I just want to explain what happens when you're in fight or flight for a second. So again, like I mentioned before the podcast, people think stress is psychological, right? So thought to the input, that's the psyche, and your emotions or the physiology is what you feel. But in fight or flight physiology, your stress hormones go up. So your heart rate's up, breathing's up, sweating's up, et cetera. But your inflammatory cytokines go up, the little molecules that communicate in the body. So your entire body's inflamed, including your brain. Your brain's inflamed. Half your brain is glial cells. Your brain itself is inflamed. then your neurotransmitters go from calming to excitatory. Then finally, your body's consuming fuel. Instead of refueling the tank, you're actually consuming fuel. So the number one factor that determines chronic disease, mental and physical, is sustained threat physiology. Again, physiology just means how the body functions as opposed to the structure.
Let me go back to the expressive writing because that's really important. I started a few weeks ago and I found that I love writing down, you know, 5 to 10 minutes a day. And I'm not writing down just my negative thoughts. And by the way, I found out a few months ago that I also exhibit and have anger as well. I thought I was just snotty.
I could have told you that.
I probably have told you that. I just had it shoved down forever. And then, you know, you start going to these couples coachings and you start talking about your feelings and emotions and looking back towards your past. But the expressive writing for me every day, I've been doing it for like the last 3 weeks. I actually have a lot of gratitude. I have many of these small problems, but all of a sudden I'm writing out, man, I do have an awesome wife. She drives me nuts sometimes, but she's amazing. I've got a great team here. I'm closing a deal. I've got 6 kids. 3 of them are really set their futures. The other 3 are great. Can you talk about expressive writing and how somebody should implement that in their lives? Because that seems like that was the turning point for you as well.
Well, I first of all, let's make it really clear that there's never one solution. Writing is only the starting point. It is not the solution. But it breaks things up. And there's a book here written by Dr. James Pennebaker. He published the first paper in 1986. It's called Opening Up by Writing It Down. And he just documents the effectiveness on the body of expressive writing. You drop down inflammatory markers, wounds heal faster, the viral load drops down, you have less cardiac issues after a heart attack, anxiety, depression, school performance all go up. And we've actually interviewed him a few times on our scientific roundtable, and we asked him how it works, and he doesn't honestly know, but he discovered inadvertently is that everybody has secrets. Everybody. I mean, things we don't like to talk about, funny thought patterns, things we've done, and it takes a lot of mental energy to keep these secrets under wraps. And so what happens, you don't have to confess it to a priest or to a psychologist. You simply write it on a piece of paper. And the reason why you tear it up is for 2 reasons. One of them is to write as freely as you can. In other words, the more emotional expression you can get into it. And again, basically most research has been done on negative writing, but it turns out that writing in general is simply a thought separation exercise. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts are here, you're here. So I'm now convinced you have no control over your thoughts. Zero. And any attempt to control your thoughts actually fires them up even more. So, and the same thing to write about is all as you write, all these issues come up. They're not issues. They're just thoughts. Mm-hmm. So as you tear them up, you're writing with freedom. You're not analyzing them. It's just an exercise. I mean, obviously you can do creative writing, but the people that hold on to the writing actually, as one of my colleagues says, hold on to their pain.
Yes.
So you identify with your thoughts, but they're just thoughts. So let's go back to the repetitive unpleasant thoughts, the OCD type stuff. It's considered incurable. I'm fine. I've helped dozens of people out of this really severe hole. People that go through the process we'll talk about later called the DOC journey, direct your own cure journey. It's a sequence that allows you to understand the problem, to start calming things down, improve awareness. Then you get to the anger issues. Every person that heals has crossed the anger threshold. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the word forgiveness. I had a big discussion with the author of the book, Dr. Fred Luskin, about forgiveness, forgive for good. That's a whole different topic, but forgiveness is too big of a word. There's things every day that happen that irritate you. So you just learn to feel the hit, and there's ways of processing it. So again, the expressive writing is the starting point. It creates an awareness. Mm-hmm. But the key issue for change in your brain, which is the real solution, is awareness, which the writing does. You've separated from the thoughts that are here, but then you have to redirect. Now, if you redirect first to distract yourself, your inflammatory markers go straight up. So you're going back in the conversation, the essence of chronic disease, mental and physical, including pain, is sustained exposure to threat physiology. Your body's fired up, it breaks down. We've known forever that chronic stress kills people. People die 7 years earlier. Cancer, heart disease, osteoporosis, autoimmune disorders are all from sustained stress. So again, reiterating one point, stress is not psychological. It's your total body's reaction to a threat, any threat. Again, my cat has the same reaction. Her whole body fires up. She does have consciousness, but she doesn't have cognition. So what we have as adults is, quote, self-esteem. We have the stories about our life that mostly are made up of cognitive distortions. Mm-hmm. Again, that's a different topic, but we defend our view of ourselves in relationship to the world, which takes a lot of energy. So briefly, the four real steps of healing are simply called thought diversion, where you do expressive writing, mindfulness, cognitive restructuring, all change your thought patterns. But the biggest issue that's been missed by the mental health world and medicine is the physiology. When your brain's on fire, these thoughts come out like crazy. You can't stop them. So thoughts fire up the physiology or the brain. Then the brain fires up the thoughts. But there's so many other things in life that can fire up the brain that you have to learn how to calm down the brain as a separate entity. Then the thoughts start to diminish. So the first step is thought diversion. And again, it's too big of a topic for today, but leg five of my process talks about anger processing. So calming down the nervous system is really key. The third step, where the healing actually occurs, is neuroplasticity. You put your brain into circuits that you enjoy. So it's like becoming a professional living your life. You're not trying to fix your pain. You're trying to learn skills to process adversity better and to nurture joy. They're two separate skill sets. Then the final step is that as you go through this process, your ego starts to dissolve.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's amazing. It's interesting because this may seem ridiculous to some, but some of them are like, thank you for asking. I know, listening. A lot of people have never really sat with their thoughts before. And that's why we leave the TV on, this constant noise. A lot of people they're actually in pain sitting in silence because their thoughts are too overwhelming. Right. Can you just talk to them for a second? And this sounds silly, but not to most people, maybe many people. Can you give them an example of a reoccurring thought maybe that they could say, okay, I get it now? Because I'm telling you, I know many people that literally cannot sit in silence because it's too painful for them.
First of all, I think this is way more common than acknowledge. OCD affects about 3-4% of people. I think it's everybody. Mm-hmm. Now, it can be sort of minimal, not a big deal. Most people, I think, comes into a disruptive mode. Some people, it's pretty disturbing. But with my patients in chronic pain, these thoughts are pretty intense. And so one of the exercises that people do is actually just sit still, do nothing, and just be with your thoughts for as long as you can tolerate. Because remember, you can't conquer these thoughts. You're not going to do this. You're not going to just muscle your way through this. So you just sit with your thoughts as much as you can tolerate. Because the number one factor in healing is be nice to yourself. Yeah. So you're with the thoughts. You can't tolerate them. Okay, maybe it's a minute. Maybe it's 30 seconds. Maybe it's 5 minutes. Whatever it is, you can only tolerate your thoughts for so long because they are painful. So that's one exercise to consider. The second thing is you're not alone. This is incredibly common. The research shows that 90.2% of kids in the 8-year-old age range have these crazy thoughts, and 25% of them are miserable with them at 8 years old. So it's common. But also point out that once people understand the physiology of pain, that anxiety and anger are just sensations, not psychological. The sensations generated by your threat physiology, again, a 1,000,000-to-1 ratio. As you learn to, let me ask you a rhetorical question. Okay, if anxiety is just a chemical state, how do you lower anxiety? It's not responsive to rational control. How do you lower anxiety? You won't answer the question. It's a trick question. Give it a shot.
How do you lower it?
How do I lower anxiety? See, that's huge because you try to talk yourself into something else, right? You try to tell yourself it's going to be okay, I'm okay. But so obviously that makes it worse.
What's your brain doing then?
I feel like it's making everything worse. And then I'm worrying about it more. Yeah. Yeah.
So a higher percent of your time is spent in these racing thoughts, trying to calm things down. Remember, it's a 1,000,000-to-1 ratio of conscious versus unconscious. So the way you lower anxiety is simply lower your stress chemistry. Mm-hmm. So we can do it. So it's called dynamic healing. And there's three portals to do this. So you have the input or your stresses. The research term is allostatic load. Then you actually have your nervous system, which can be calm or hyperactive. Then you have your physiology, which can be in fight or flight or in safety. So the essence of solving the problem is simply lowering your fight or flight physiology. So I'm going to work backwards. So there's direct ways of lowering your anxiety, which there's a nerve called the vagus nerve. Remember, anxiety is a hypermetabolic inflamed state. So there's a nerve in the body called the vagus nerve, which is highly anti-inflammatory. So humming actually stimulates the 7th cranial nerve, which is close to the 10th cranial nerve, which is the vagus nerve. Certain sounds of music, like lullaby, classical music, actually calm the vagus nerve directly. There's also called vagal stimulation, which actually uses music through the ears, filtering out certain pitches of music. You can rub your forehead, which is the 5th cranial nerve. Again, calms things down. And we all put washcloths on our heads when we have headaches. And then, do you know Dr. Stephen Porges by chance, the polyvagal theory?
I don't. Not yet.
So he and I put together a round table. He and I have become close friends, and his wife, Sue Carter, is just a superstar. And so he put out the polyvagal theory. So he has taught us, we meet twice a month in a national, international scientific group with the top scientists in the world. And he's taught us that the autonomic nervous system is this, at the center of everything. So the vagus nerve is in the middle of that. Essentially, almost all anti-inflammatory activity in the brain comes to the vagus nerve. So those are ways of directly stimulating the vagus nerve. Then you have your nervous system, that the more resilient your nervous system is, it takes more stress to put you in fight or flight. So ways you increase resilience to the nervous system is diet, anti-inflammatory diet. Exercise is a big one. And probably the biggest one, I don't go past go until I get people to sleep. Mm-hmm. Lack of sleep actually induces chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And people thought that chronic pain causes lack of sleep. It's actually the other way around. Mm-hmm. Lack of sleep actually causes chronic pain. And this is where trauma therapy comes into play, because you do have an adverse childhood. Your brain's hyperreactive. It's like a feral cat. So the trauma therapy that works is one that just teaches you calming tools. We call it somatic therapy. The trauma therapy that doesn't work is just analyzing the heck out of your trauma. That's actually counterproductive, because you're going backwards. Mm-hmm. So the output of the physiology, you have your nervous system, then you have the input. And on the input part of it is two questions. What are you putting into your brain, and what are you holding on to? So we talked about this briefly as far as what are you holding on to, is that if you're 90% of people in chronic pain, mental or physical, are still angry at the person that hurt them or situation. They're not letting it go. So again, we talked about forgiveness is too big of a word, but there's ways of what we call anger processing to just cut it. Done. Mm-hmm. It's too big to do battle with. It's powerful. It's addicting. You cannot control anger, but mm-hmm. you can reprogram it. Mm-hmm. So input's a big deal as far as that goes. But the other thing that's simpler but hard at the same time is, what are you loading into it? So the cardinal rule of treating chronic pain is no discussion your pain, period, to anybody, especially your family.
That's hard for a lot of people. I'm going to tell you
this. It's hard for my husband.
The victims out there saying, how can I do that? That's all I think about. I have to share my pain with everybody and let everybody know. So that's a really difficult one for a lot of people.
Absolute.
It's a great challenge.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you cannot move forward. I mean, we talk about the stress avoiding being a mandatory step.
Yeah.
The other mandatory step is you simply cannot discuss your pain, period.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Mm-hmm. Not even a little bit. Now, you can just let your provider know for maybe 30 seconds what's going on, but that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I also found out, and I always remember, I'm guilty as charged. I'm convinced now that probably most people spend about 70% of their waking hours talking about their pain.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you? You're looking for a solution, right? Sure. So no pain talk, no discussion in your medical care, period, at all. No complaining. What does that do to your physiology?
Oh, yeah.
No being critical.
Yes.
No giving unasked for advice. No gossiping.
This is my favorite topic ever. I'm sorry.
Well, everyone listening to this is, I got nothing to talk about now.
That's awesome, doctor. No, but hold on. Let me just take time. Okay. We do have a lot of kids at home, but that is one thing that I notice a difference. When the kids complain, when they, you know, gossip about someone else, when something's going on, everyone's stressed, everyone's anxious, everyone's not in a good mood. They're not feeling well. You know what I mean? And it is a huge difference. It's a challenge. And I do challenge everyone to take a look at what you're saying to people, what you're talking about, what you're letting other people say to you. Because if you're around people that constantly criticize other people and gossip, you're taking that in, and it is affecting your health.
So what you're saying, Julia, is if you're going to give me a problem, instead of giving me the problem, give me the solution. That's what we try to do in business. I know the problem is here, but what's the solution?
Right.
That's the solution. And you know, Dr. David, I want to give you credit for something that you just enlightened me on. When I sing opera to my wife, I see that she lights up. It's got to be Vegas nerve when I sing you.
It's embarrassment. But it's
okay. What is that? I miss that. What'd you say?
Oh, I sing. I'm an opera singer. I've been singing for a couple of years, and now now you hear it. Now,
but I do something enlighten me is that when you do stuff like that, I start humming, and that's doing something to my vagus nerve, which is trying to calm my stress down.
I'm stressing you out. I'm making you feel good at the same time.
I want to talk about children and families because, you know, we talk about the business world and the high level stresses, but there are moms at home with kids. And I actually had my kids do the writing exercise. They decided to burn it because they like fire. I don't know if that's the same thing. Sure that's fine. They thought it was amazing. I mean, I'm talking like my 8-year-old, my 12-year-old, 13, all the way up. They thought it was incredible. And I think that's another thing is that we as parents, and maybe in school too, we you know, if the kids say something or are afraid of something, we just push them through it. It's like, don't be afraid. Just do it. Just go out. You know what I mean? And we don't really teach them about their thoughts and what to do with them. I feel like we're not training them correctly to be adults. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I would love to do a separate podcast on the family because the last 2 years of my practice was almost exclusively focused on the families because the families are the strongest triggers by far. And so, especially with chronic pain. So I'll briefly give you some overviews of what to do with the family. So first of all, none of the pain talk we just talked about, nothing. Second thing is you create a safe zone in your house that's unequivocally safe no matter what. People can go there, relax. They don't have to be threatened by somebody being in a bad mood. So if you get into an argument, go outside. Mm-hmm. Get it out of the house. So one nurse friend of mine sent her kids to the garage. Their 16 and 17-year-old would get into an argument. She sent them to the garage. So you're welcome to fight, but not in the safe place. So you got to create a safe zone in your house that's absolute. So that's, again, preferably the whole house. Mm-hmm. Then weekly family meetings, create structure, rotate who runs the meetings, create an agenda, run it again like a business, right? It's a business of living life. So the family gets involved. Everybody has their role in making this happen. Then there's a book out there I've given to hundreds and hundreds of people called Parent Effectiveness Training. Have you heard of this book?
Yeah, I bought it. My kids were like, what is this, mom? What are you trying to train us? Because they opened it. So yes, I do have it.
Yeah, I just rebought it myself. I probably read the thing 25 times.
Yeah.
Read it when my son was about a year old. Completely changed everything. Mm. And I learned it from my cousin who had 4 children under the age of 6. And these kids didn't squabble. They didn't fight. She didn't have to discipline them. Because what it does, it takes away the power struggle. Okay, none of us like to be told what to do, right?
Yeah.
Why would your kids, especially your kids?
Yeah.
But we do it. But one concept I'd like to convey today is that, okay, a kid gets anxious and frustrated. They have no control. Okay, so it's a massive reaction. It feels bad. So what do? We discipline them. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're teaching them to suppress. We know that suppressed thoughts actually have more impact on your nervous system than expressed thoughts. Mm-hmm. So what we've done, we've really fired up their physiology. We really fired up their anxiety. So what we need to teach kids is self-regulation skills. Remember, you cannot control anxiety and anger, but you can regulate it. Mm-hmm. So again, things we just talked about. You get the input, the nervous system, the output, and all of them are in play every day. There's no one and done. These become automatic. And like I mentioned before, becoming professional at living your life. So I don't go into why you're having troubles from the past, you know, analyzing this and this, or how to fix it cognitively. The bottom line is there's a bunch of ways just calming down your physiology. So instead of finding out what triggered them or what their needs are, or teach them how to regulate their physiology, because remember, when your brain's anxious and frustrated, the blood flow shifts from your thinking brain to the limbic brain. You can't think. Mm-hmm. So then you get into an argument so first of all, if your kid's triggered, you're triggered. We call it mirror neurons. Have you heard this term called mirror neurons?
Yes, I have.
Right. So like, for instance, if you're somebody yawns, other people yawn. If somebody laughs, other people laugh. But guess what? When you're in a bad mood, what happens to people around you? Mm-hmm. But it's not psychological. Mm-hmm. It's a direct stimulation of that part of the brain.
Wow.
It's direct. So one of the rules that we put in place with the families. So first of all, we found out that the families were the biggest factors in keeping people in pain. But we also found that the families are the biggest factors pulling people out of pain. Mm. So again, it's not counseling. It's not solving problems. Triggers are unsolvable. What you can do, you can learn how to process the triggers. In other words, the whole family learns a skill of processing triggers quickly, and then things change. So it's about structure, 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 and just tools. I don't want to use the word boundaries. Mm-hmm. Just a matter of negotiating, learning to live together, how to negotiate the inevitable differences with the basic common principle is that we're going to have a good time. We're going to have a good time. Mm-hmm. So again, the healing process is two separate processes. One is learn how to regulate your physiology or process adversity more skillfully. The other part is nurturing joy, but they're separate skill sets. You can't use joy to counteract these circuits because it's a mismatch. Mm-hmm. So what you do is that you learn the tools to regulate physiology, and then nurturing joy is something we're not taught very much. Or should or should not do this, should not do this. Mm-hmm. So how many of us are actually taught to regulate our physiology and actually to nurture joy? Mm-hmm. Wasn't me.
Wasn't me either.
Right.
Yes.
So anyway, the family situation. So for instance, you have a bad day at work. You walk through the front door in your bad mood. What do you think that does to your family?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I experienced this the other day. I did it to my wife. She's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I'm having a rough day. And I know exactly what you're talking
well,
about.
Well, a lot of us just ignore it. Really forget it. Dad's in a bad mood. Everyone's sitting there. And I actually went over and I addressed it, which is very unusual.
Yes.
So here's my strong advice. Don't walk in the front door yet. Yes. Don't until you've done your self-regulation skills yourself. Mm-hmm. And don't, no exceptions to this either, where it's like, see, you know, 90% of the time you're in a good mood, great. But see, it's the unpredictability that's the problem. It's intermittent reinforcement that's the problem. So if you walk in the room in a good mood 90% of the time and 10% of the time you're in a bad mood, nobody knows exactly which person's walking through the door. So mm-hmm. anxiety was just you walking through the door.
Yes.
So, you know, take a break, go for a drive, go for a walk, do your expressive writing at work. Don't bring any work troubles at home. That's complaining. Mm-hmm. Zero. And my wife actually taught this to me. I had all these stresses and I'd bring them home and I'd talk to her about it. And one day she just said, stop. These are not my problems. I'm going, what do you mean? You're my wife. These are supposed to be your problems. She goes, no, they're not. So again, if you make your house a sanctuary of safety, bringing your work troubles home doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a bad mood, don't walk in the door. Just wait till you calm down. Whatever you have to do, it just there's nothing you can do to compensate from walking in the front door in a bad mood.
Mm-hmm. Dr. David, before we wrap up the show, what do your colleagues think of all this research mm-hmm. you've done? The ones who are actually in the medical profession doing these surgeries, and they must be saying, hold on a second, what does this have to do with it? I see the fifth vertebrae is out. This needs to be operated on.
Yeah, it's a mess. I mean, spine surgery, I quit my practice because I've seen hundreds and hundreds of patients go to pain-free. My own experience duplicated multiple times, many venues. And, you know, no risk of surgery. Then do you know what the success rate of a back fusion for back pain is? Just take a guess. I thought it was 90% at one point because I was one of those aggressive surgeons.
Oh, yeah. Success. I would say 20%.
It's about 20%.
Wow. Did you read that?
No, I didn't read that. Just knew that 10 out of 10 people.
20% is what it is.
Wow. Yeah.
Why would you go through a big back operation with a success rate of 20%? So what do you think the chances of making your pain worse are? Your brain's on fire. You're adding more trauma to the body.
Yes.
What do you think the chances are of making you worse? Mm-hmm. The perfect operation.
I mean, the chances are huge. I mean, you're already putting more stress. You're hoping that it works. And then when it doesn't work, you still feel the pain. And then you have those ruts, those repetitive those thoughts mm-hmm. going down. Right. And it's a vicious cycle. Then you're starting flooding yourself with adrenals. And your cortisol levels keep going up. And you've addressed the structural problems. The structural might be okay, but the rest of it's not okay. So,
The chance of making it worse is between 40 to 60%.
Wow.
The chance of making it worse is double you're getting better. And to make it even worse is that the surgeries that are being done, it's been documented over and over again that disc degeneration is a normal process that has nothing to do with pain. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Bone spurs, ruptured disc, arthritis, degenerated disc have no connection with causing pain. None.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So there's been extremely little interest in the surgical world, except I have actually it's changing a bit. So I'm meeting next week with three other neurosurgeons who said, look, what we're doing is wrong. So this is my first interest, by the way, I've had in 20 years of other surgeons on board. So I've had lots of non-surgeons interested, and that's starting to take a lot of traction. Mm-hmm. And surgeons are doers. And mm-hmm. what we're actually discussing is flat out forming a new medical society of just bringing science to the medicine.
Nice.
Wow. I mean, we could talk a long time about this, but medicine is completely disconnected from the science, completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were learned in high school physiology class, health class, about the body's physiology. And so in medicine, we're totally ignoring that. Mm-hmm. We learn physiology beyond words in medical school, and somehow we've completely disconnected from that.
Well, and medicine doesn't have anything with nutrition. I mean, when you basically, you're just skirting away any type of nutrition. I mean, as far as supplementation, as far as eating a clean diet, I mean, that's completely, I mean, that's what inflammation is. I mean, there's so many people on anti-inflammatories in this country. It's ridiculous. Right. But if they at least change their diet and all. Dr. David, we could speak for the next hour. We're definitely going to have you on again, but I want the listeners to be able to go to your website.
Well, the website is super impressive. Can you, because you have so much information there. I mean, the book is just, it's great. It's excellent, but you have more information on your website. Can you just give us an idea?
It's called backincontrol.com, one word. Then there's a resources page that links you to an app we put together. My wife put it together. She's a tap dancer. So she brought play into the picture. So it turns out that one of the ultimate answers for chronic pain is giving back, community, play, spiritual journey, that's moving away from the pain circuits. Mm-hmm. So she and I held workshops together, and she brought in rhythm and music. And those have been documented to be effective. Not as a distraction, but it changes your body's chemistry. So it's called the DOC Journey, Direct Your Own Care Journey app. There's also a computer-based course. It takes you through a sequence. I also blog for Psychology Today. There's over 1.2 million views on this blog. It is called Anxiety, another name for pain. And as you can tell, this is an extremely complex process. But I want to tell you that chronic pain, mental or physical, is absolutely solvable, period. Mm-hmm. Just flat out solvable. Not to be managed, you can solve it, number one. Mm-hmm. Second of all, it just takes repetition. It's just training your brain to actually go a different direction. So it's not that hard to do. But the main thing is, which is really critical, you mentioned diet, we talked about mindfulness, we talked about expressive writing. Chronic pain is complicated, so it's like fighting a forest fire. It takes multiple approaches, and everyone counts. So mm-hmm. diet helps, expressive writing helps, sleep helps, but nothing in isolation works. Mm-hmm. So you have to find your combination for you that works. Everybody's completely different. So it's that combination of things that makes things work. You just try mindfulness, for instance, will help a little bit. Expressive writing will help a little bit, but you have to combine the modalities in order to heal.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
We want to thank you for being on the show. And once again, it's backincontrol.com. I'm going to continue to sing opera to my wife because I know for her vagus nerve, it'll make her calm her down.
I'm going to have to start humming. The kids notice that. Sophia noticed that when I get stressed.
By the way, if you go to, it's not on the Doc Journey, but I haven't had a chance to put this on the Doc Journey, but on backincontrol.com, again, write this down. Stage 3, Step 2 is all about the family.
Okay.
And I'd love to hear your experience on this because it's been the most, within 6 weeks, families change dramatically. It's unbelievable.
Say it again.
Stage 3, Step 2 on backincontrol.com there's a whole bunch of blogs on the family rules around anger and pain. And it was just incredible. So again, pain holds you, your family holds you back into pain.
Yeah.
It's equally as powerful pulling you out of pain. It's just a remarkable transformation.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have you back on for that.
Absolutely.
About the family. Let's do that. Yeah. Let's plan that because I think this has been a super podcast because I know there's so many people out there with anxiety, with pain, and what an amazing journey this can mm-hmm. be for everybody. Because we talk about this a lot, but I didn't know the science behind it. So that's why it's exciting.
Yeah. Thanks, Dr. David. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. And we will have the doctor back on.
Take care, everybody.